This is May 9th, and this is the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. And welcome into the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. Hope you guys are having a great day, a great week. And on this episode, Connor Ryan and I get into an early look at the offseason. I know it's May 9th. We're talking offseason. It still blows my mind, but we must talk the offseason. So Connor and I get into ways the Bruins can free up cap space. We get into trade pieces on the roster, big and small. We get into deep conversations about guys that maybe you didn't think they would trade, that maybe they end up having to look at trading. We get into the chances they bring back Tyler Bertuzzi and Dmitry Orlov, and we also get into what the bottom six might look like next year. Again, this is an early look. Things are subject to change as news comes out as the offseason goes along, but going to be a big offseason. Really big offseason. Again, hinges on the decisions of Bergeron and Krejci, but there's a lot here. So Connor and I did our best to get into it and talk about it and all those things that you know and love. But without further ado, here is my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. I think people are still obviously shaken by the Bruins' first-round loss. But I must admit, people must feel kind of good seeing that the Panthers are up on the Maple Leafs 3-0. I think that has to help, right? I mean, that's got to be – I mean, it doesn't fix it. It doesn't come close to filling the gap, obviously. But there's got to be something there that makes it a teeny tiny bit better seeing that happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one a testament to, I think if Bruins fans are expecting this team to take a step back, which they will, I don't think they're going to win 65 games. That being said, I think we're both in agreement. This team is still probably going to get 95 to 105, 110 points if all goes well. They're still going to be a very competitive team. And hell, maybe you just get in the playoffs and see kind of where the dice roll in your favor, right? So again, good on the Panthers for really getting on a roll here, playing really, really good hockey. So a testament to them. You can also push back by being like, yes, maybe the Panthers were better than we all expected. Bruins still had them on the ropes for three games and refused to deliver that right hook. So again, if anything, if you want to be a glass, you know, half full, half empty, you could say, yeah, Panthers are doing well. But hell, if this is the fight that the Maple Leafs are giving them, and you brought the Panthers to seven games,
That was what I was about to say, is that the other side of this coin is the Maple Leafs look horrendous. Horrendous.
Yeah,
and you knew this, or not new, but you had an idea this was coming when they're passing around Bud Lights and celebrating after they won that series against the Lightning, and they celebrated like they won the cup. You get the vibe then. You don't see teams celebrating first round wins. They did, and now they're down 3-0. And who knows? Who knows what happens? I'm done with projecting series, so who knows? But this Panthers team looks legit. Looks legit. Looks like a legit playoff team. You certainly weren't talking about the Bruins. They were not. But the Panthers certainly are bringing it. And Bobrovsky's playing well. And man, that Bennett line and just
Bennett's been money
a
for
wrecking
a player
ball.
Like that. Yeah,
a wrecking ball and Tkachuk. And we can get, you know, I know people have kind of debated between Tkachuk and Pastrnak and such, but man, Tkachuk looks like a playoff player, doesn't he? Again, I'm not comparing them, but I'm just saying Tkachuk has been an outstanding player in these playoffs so far. And then also, before we get into today's show, draft lotteries tonight. This doesn't affect the Bruins really at all, but the draft lottery, or tonight, it happened Monday. We're recording this on Monday. Do you have any preference where Bedard goes?
Not Arizona. It's the one place I don't want to go. A place that is literally the Satrials of the NHL. It's a place where you dump your contracts and hide the books and I call a drink. No, that team should not get any benefit of the doubt in terms of just the way
It's
they
bad
run
enough they got
things. So how
Logan
much of
Cooley
a
last year. You know, it's bad enough they have him.
for how much of a clown car operation that thing is, that team does not get it. Team that I think would, you know, Columbus seems like they'd be very excited, even though it's not really a big draw. If you asked me which team I think would be great to grab a player like that, give me Philly. We need the
I
Flyers
was
to be
just
good
thinking
again.
that.
We need the Flyers to be. It's like when the Rangers were had a bit of their rebuild. They were pretty quiet for a few years. Just doesn't feel right. We need Philly. We need the Flyers to be back in it. We need Gritty to have something to cheer about, right? Like we need that back in the NHL. So it's like how in the NBA the Knicks are now good. It's much better when they're a better team. As funny as it is to dunk on Knicks fans, having like an energized MSG is a lot better than what it used to be. So I'm all in for Bedard going to Philly.
I am in complete agreement with you on this. The only other thing is, if you went to Columbus, I think Columbus would have a chance to actually be kind of good next year. Just because you have the pieces there. They were injured this year. You have Gaudreau, who has a year under his belt. That seems like a fit where if he went there, they would be pretty good immediately. I agree with you though. You need him. I don't. You know, look. I grew up with cousins in Anaheim. I was the Ducks were like my second team growing up. I think the Ducks are cool. They're a fun team. No, you want him in an Eastern market that's pretty prominent, and that's Philly. I'm in total agreement with you on this. Again, it's like when the Rangers were, as you said, as the Rangers were bad and they were in it for Lafreniere. I would love to see Bedard in Philly for every reason possible. Montreal would be tough. Montreal might be tough in the division with the Bruins, but Philly would be the interesting one. But we'll see. I mean, it obviously already happened. We don't know about it, but when people listen to this, it'll have already happened. So we want to do kind of an off-season preview in the show. This is an early look at the off-season. Again, the wheels are still starting to turn. The Bruins are out in England with the Spurs, the soccer team Spurs, not the San Antonio Spurs.
Not with Tim
I don't
Duncan.
know. I don't know European soccer that well. I saw some of the comments saying that like the Spurs also choke a lot. I don't know this to be true or not. I don't know if you do. But I just thought that was also kind of funny. If that is true, I'm sorry to any Spurs
I
fans out
believe
there
that
that
is the
joked.
narrative. Again, I'm not an expert, but I do believe they've had a couple of unfortunate postseason runs as well. So.
Yeah, they bonded over it. Maybe they canceled it out, you know, no more bad postseason runs. They just, you know, they put it to rest. But an early look at the offseason, because when you look ahead to next season, Connor, the cap space, not a lot there, not much at all. And Sweeney's gonna have to do some cap gymnastics. He's gonna have to clear some space. And there have been some names that have been thrown around and not reported, obviously, but just kind of like, oh, if you traded this guy, you'd free some space here. So I want to go through some of them. Because again, the luxuries you had this year are not going to be there next year. You're not going to have Jeremy Swayman making entry-level money. You're not going to be having Taylor Hall on the third line making $6 million. It's just not going to happen. So one name that's been tossed around a lot is Matt Grzelcyk on D. 3.687 3.687 million he's due next year against the cap. How would you feel about that if they were to deal him? Because again, feels like he works in this system, but he's underutilized a bit. So it's a, you know, can you have a guy making that money that's underutilized?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue is you look at the way the Bruins used him, especially in the playoffs. I mean, we saw how, you know, positive the returns are when he's with Charlie McAvoy. I think that's evident. But we didn't look in the playoffs, even in games where he played, he was only averaging like 13, 14 minutes a night. Like, I don't know if he's just fallen out of favor with how Montgomery utilizes him, but he's a guy that also you look at how he fits into the system, as you said. And if we were like going through, I'm probably getting ahead of, you know, the guys you're going through. But if you look at like ways to free up cap, whether it's buying out Mike Riley or trading Forbert or something else like that, like Grzelcyk, yes, he's making 3.6 and he's a pending free agent at the end of next year. But I think if you're finding guys that can still best fit in the system and gets that lineup to fall into place, I think Grzelcyk still has value for this current team, right? In terms of one, you know what he's going to do. With Charlie McAvoy. And yes, maybe you have to staple those two guys together, but we know what the results are if you put them together. And if you trade Grzelcyk for just cap relief for what have you, again, Charlie McAvoy is a very, very, very good defenseman. You can put a lot of guys with him, but I think you saw, you know, in the playoffs how much having a bit of consistency in terms of those pairings can help out. Like if you go into next year and you move some cap around, but your top four is still Gerslick McAvoy, Lindholm, Carlo, you're doing pretty good. Like again, you might have to uproot that whole third deep pairing and switch some stuff around, but there's worse situations. Now, if Grizzly is what's holding you back from getting Orlov, maybe that's when the Bruins have to view, how much you'd rather have that. That being said, I still don't really like Orlov and McAvoy together as a pairing. So it's a bit of a tough call in terms of, moving up that cap and what the risk and reward is. Like if you're looking for just regular season play, I think having Grizzly back there helps you out a great deal in terms of not only just his play and what he does well, but making the rest of that decor fall into place. But you look at how he was used in the playoffs, even though like I'm not gonna really put him as being responsible for like that game five turnover. I know people aren't happy with where he was on that OT goal in game seven, but I'm not putting like a lot of the blame on Grizzly for the failings of this series as opposed to maybe previous ones where people had a gripe with him in the playoffs. But you look at how the Bruins used him, it's like do they view him as being part of the equation when I don't know. You look at all the the alternate players they swapped in for Grzelcyk. Didn't really like what I saw, so it's a tough call. Like if you ask me, I would find other avenues to free up cap on the decor before moving Grzelcyk, but that's also just me. Maybe I'm just a BU honk, Evan.
Maybe you're B honk, but also like they probably win game six if Grzelcyk's in for Clifton, right? Like Clifton directly led to, I think, two or three goals. Like just take one of those off the board and you win the game. So again, I mean, you were talking a little bit about there with Forbert, and it feels like Forbert and Grzelcyk are kind of the two that people are up in the air about that are coming back, in terms of their money. And, I think a big reason why Grzelcyk didn't get that showing that, he maybe should have gotten in the playoffs was Orlov was there, and Orlov may not be back next year. Probably won't be. Again, I see a guy like Orlov making around 6.25 from a
I
team
think
that's
so.
going to rely on him to be a top pairing defenseman. I mean, like he still put up 8 points in the playoffs. Like there's production there. Now I'm kind of on the fence about this. If you, and again, this probably wouldn't happen. But just on paper, would you take Grzelcyk and Forbert over Orlov? If that's what it took, if to bring back Orlov, you had to trade away Grzelcyk and Forbert. I know this is big, and again, it's an early look. Our opinions might change throughout the offseason. But like, would you do that? Because I like Orlov, but I also like the way Grzelcyk can transition, and I don't know if you want to deal away both. That hurts your depth.
I think it also depends. I mean, like, you could make the argument that, like, having a guy like Lorai in the system, and I don't think he's going to be ready this year, or at least to the start of this year. Maybe he comes up later on. You have that luxury of having more guys in place. But I like Orlov. I don't like giving him 6 years.
I would agree with you.
And that I think that's it. I think you bring him back for another year or two, you're gonna be very, he's still going to be very good. I don't wasn't swept away by how well he played in the playoffs. I mean, he was offensively great, but a lot of risk reward and not enough physicality for a guy that I think we all expected was going to blow up some guys.
Yeah, defensively wasn't
Now,
really terrific.
yeah. Still like a very good player. It's just giving him 6 years, 36 million. And again, it all goes into just what you're looking to get out of this team in the coming years, right? I think we're all in agreement, or at least you and I are, that this team's still going to be competitive. But I think you look at how I imagine Don Sweeney and the Bruins are viewing this core, you have a good foundation in place beyond the uncertainty of Bergeron and Krejci. But I still think you'd like to have some flexibility in terms of not having Albert. Like the Bruins don't really have albatross contracts in terms of guys they want to move or what have you. So if you're the team like the Bruins who are trying to just get past this upcoming year in terms of this cap crunch, and then if the cap jumps up, you have a little more leeway to move guys around. I could see them being hesitant to be the team that hands Orlov that, 6 years, 36 million, because you want to have that freedom to retool on the fly when, let's say, Bergeron comes back, but then retires next year, and you have a lot of cap space, and you have room to really kind of tweak how you assemble your forward core, what have you. Signing Orlov to that much money, kind of risky, right? Whereas I think if, let's say, you move Forbert, you buy out Riley, you keep Grzelcyk, and you have him in the top pair, and you know what you're getting out of him in the regular season, and you roll with it then. Hell, if Lorai hits the ground running and Providence gets a call up late and fits into a role, maybe you move Grzelcyk at the deadline, right? I think you just have more flexibility, maybe, if you opt for it that way. But that's not to discount, I think, what Orlov brings, especially in the short term. It's just long term having your options open. That's where I think it can be kind of risky about handing a guy like Orlov that much money.
I mean, he's 31. Like, doesn't that feel like a little bit of a Torey Krug contract? Like, go get the bag, but don't be the team to hand it out to him. Like, I like that to me feels a little like that. And that's where I think that the Orlov, I agree with you. The Grzelcyk rolling into next season with Grzelcyk, McAvoy, Lindholm, Carlo, and then playing out the season, you'll figure out your third pair. You've got guys in the system who can step in there, or maybe you go out and sign someone for very little money. And then if you really need another defenseman at the deadline, you can go get one. But I just go back to, like, there are teams out there that I think will fully pay a guy like Orlov, just like I feel there are teams out there that are going to give Connor Clifton $3 or $4 million a year, right? It feels like, to be a potential top four defenseman. And again, I think it's a good problem to have for the Bruins that you have these, but it also isn't, because those are big decisions to make. Those are really big decisions to make. Another guy that is thrown around a bit, has been thrown around, is Taylor Hall up front. And it's not that he didn't live up to the $6 million. It's that having a $6 million left wing on the third line is a luxury that you will not have this upcoming year. Obviously, I think Bertuzzi's younger, probably fits you a little bit better. The return was there. Ironically enough, those two were the top two scores in the first round for the Bruins. So there's that. But someone's going to pay Bertuzzi. To keep Bertuzzi, you're going to have to sell him on pizza in the North End and hoping that he wants to take a hometown discount, which, why would he want to? He's been here for a few months and he wants his payday. He should get his payday. Would you trade Hall? If it meant keeping Bertuzzi, but I don't even know if that's going to do it to keep Bertuzzi.
Yeah, he probably have to free up more money, I'd imagine. But yeah, I think it all depends on just how the Bruins view their options going forward, right? In terms of if Bertuzzi is the right fit. Because, again, Taylor Hall, I think, should get some credit for one. I think he brought it for most of the playoffs. He kind of quieted down a little bit later on in the series, but also his minutes got cut pretty significantly in game 6 and 7.
Like, cut a ton.
But I think when you look at how you have to get past some certain rounds of playoffs, you need a lot of guys to elevate their games. And I thought Hall did that in that round one. So for a guy like him, who is a former Hart winner, who's not that far removed from it, still a high-end player, to accept a role on the third line, play defensively, I mean, he's a guy that's bought into the system here. It just, I think, depends on just where you view this core going forward and how you can build for the future of not just this upcoming year, but the years ahead in terms of having a better guy in place for, you know, the long term. So if it's a guy like Bertuzzi, right? Like, I think we've talked about it. Even if Krejci retires, which I think we probably both have a feeling that he's going to, like, I don't think we expect David Krejci to be back. If you tell me that Bergeron comes back on the cheap and you roll Marchand, Bergeron, DeBrusque, and your second line next year is Bertuzzi, Zaka, Pasternak, still going to do a lot of damage, right? I think the one thing is Bertuzzi needs to shore up his defensive game, which maybe you give him a full year in the Bruins zone system and he's a little bit more careful with the puck, because he did have quite a few costly turnovers and careless play with the puck. But offensively, you know what you're getting from. In the playoffs, he was at the net front doing a lot of stuff that needs to be done there. Full season with him at the net front on the power play could open up a lot more possibilities with how good he is passing down there. So if you move Hall and it leads to signing a guy like Bertuzzi, then it's probably worth it in terms of making the most of this core moving forward. Like, Hall at his age is still a very, very good player, but would you rather have Bertuzzi in that spot in the top six, or Hall in the middle six still contributing but not having maybe a set role next to a guy like Coyle, right? So, again, it's tough when you map out these scenarios in the offseason, because there's so much that's still, you know, yet to be determined. As you said, I'm sure we'll probably have a podcast later on in July and August where we probably have changed our opinions on things, right, in terms of how things map out.
I think it could happen to us in a month.
Yeah, exactly, in a few weeks. So, but yeah, I think it just depends on what the next move is, right? For if moving Hall just to free up cap space and giving you flexibility, but you don't use it in the right way, or it's for another third line guy. I don't know about that. But if it leads to a guy like Bertuzzi and he fits into what you're looking for in that second line, next to Zaka and Pasternak, then I could see it. But it's still a tough call. It's not, I think, an indictment on Hall and his capabilities and what he brought to this team last year. It's just the nature of the business, and you got to make some tough choices, especially with this team and the cap crunch they're facing.
I'd also be curious to see a full season of Hall, Zaka, Pastrnak, and what that could potentially do
Yeah.
on that second line, borderline first line. The other thing, by the way, is if they dealt Hall and lost Bertuzzi, like what are you doing? Like unless it was for something else, you wanted to go out and
Yes.
sign like a if Bergeron left and you wanted to go out and get a real first line center or something like that, then I guess I would understand that. But if you just did that and then really didn't do a lot. That's not a good move. So moving right along with our conversation, right back into things. One guy that's, I think we're going to see his name pop up a little this offseason or a lot, is Linus Ullmark. Again, making $5 million, has a 15-team no trade list. Obviously, probably will win the Vezina, coming off an incredibly great season for him. But it's also one of those luxuries where. Can you have Ullmark making five and Swayman making, four and a half? When you're a cap crunch team, I don't know if you can do that. And again, I think Ullmark is at his peak in terms of value. And if you did want to get something for him, now might be the time to do it. What do you think about that? I feel like that
Yeah,
won't happen.
it's
I feel like it's a great, it sounds great, but I don't know if I see them really making a hockey trade like this,
yeah, like if you're looking at a hockey trade, I think you're looking at like players Grizzlick, Hall, DeBrusk, maybe, like stuff like that. I feel like, and but again, as you said, moving Ullmark, if you're looking to free up cap space from an area of strength, I guess, right? If you're looking at Jeremy Swayman and Brandon Bussey and what they can bring, I could see it, right? Because you're looking, Swayman is due a higher contract, a bigger payday. So, and it's not like Swayman was, a weak link at all in terms of what he provided, especially in the second half of last year. So you look at moving Ullmark, you free up cap space, probably get a pretty nice return. Like you're looking at probably a first, probably a useful maybe building block, a young player that can bolster your prospect pipeline. Like it makes sense in terms of what the Bruins could be using in terms of accelerating this retool. There's a lot of risk involved, right? Like, and again, it's a position with a lot of variance. So you could say that Ullmark will never be as good as he was this past season, but you look at what was kind of the bedrock of this team's success was both Ullmark and Swayman playing at a high level. And hell, like Swayman could be the same goalie he was last year, but if Brennan Bussey struggles as a young rookie getting thrown into the system, then you've kind of got a situation similar to previous years where you had Rask kind of standing on top of his head, but you're letting points slip away during those times and to give him some rest. So it's tough, right? Like, I mean, what would you do, Evan, if it was like moving Ullmark, or would you rather move like a hockey trade of a guy like DeBrusk and Hall or someone else like that? Like, where do you view the biggest risk in terms of what those guys provide?
Well, if you lose Ullmark, I mean, you lose, as you said, one of your biggest assets of the goalie tandem, which you didn't use in the playoffs, which, like, again, you did not use it when it mattered most. What I would be intrigued is what Ullmark could get you back in terms of picks or prospects. If you wanted to, or if you wanted to trade him for a top six center, like, that's where I would be intrigued because Grizzlick's probably not getting you that much except cap relief, maybe a mid-round pick or something like that. I'm curious what Hall would get you. I don't, it doesn't get you a first, I don't think, but I would assume it would be, a second round pick maybe, or, some form of a player. But again, you want to shed cap there. You don't want to get someone back that's gonna, you don't want to have an equal trade where, you slot in another guy who makes, $4 million or something like that. Like you want the cap relief. Omark, I think could get. I think there are teams that would need a goalie. Like I've been trying to find, like, okay, who's a Western Conference team that needs a goalie? And like Edmonton needs a goalie. The Kings kind of need a goalie. The Vegas Golden Knights would need a goalie. So you can play that game of, you know, who could you trade him for, like a top six center? You know, could you trade him for? I mean, would you think Omar gets you a first? I saw Fluto wrote in the Athletic that
I he think he would.
But I think he could. I think he absolutely could. So again, if you can get in at the end of the first round and you can add a good prospect, or you know, take top prospects from another team for, like, again, this is the Vezina winner, and he's affordable. This is not like a $8-9 million goal. He's $5 million. So
yeah,
again, I think if you're making a move and you want to go big and shake things up and you want to follow the Florida Panthers model of trading something that isn't broken for something that's maybe better suits your team, I would be open to it. I would, with Olmark, because again, like yeah. you have Swayman there. And if you want, if you have some extra money and you want to sign like a veteran backup, if you don't trust Busey, there is that option as well. So I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, it also just comes down to just with the money and sense, right? Like, I'm sure Jeremy Swayman loves his, you know, working with Hallmark, and we've documented that quite a bit over the last 2 years, right? But I don't, Jeremy Swayman, do you want to sign a bridge deal, or do you want to sign like what Jake Ottinger signed? Because you probably do something similar, right? So again, it also comes down to him and his agents of what you're looking for. The Bruins could very well be like, hey, we want to keep this tandem together, but you're probably gonna have to do a bridge contract of something probably below what you're due for another year or two as we kind of get through these choppy waters. So it all comes down to, I think, what Swayman and his representatives want in terms of maybe facilitating keeping these guys in place, because again, I'm sure in a perfect world the Bruins would love to keep these two together, right? It's unorthodox that you commit to a goalie rotation like this, but hell, they won 65 games off of keeping this in place, and they probably should have kept it going in the playoffs. So I could easily see Don Sweeney, the Bruins, be like, this was a one of the bedrocks of how we were so successful in the regular season. Let's keep it together, even if it means, you know, shedding more cap on other areas. So it all depends on just what the Bruins prioritize. I mean, whatever they do in terms of freeing up cap space is going to be difficult. They're probably not going to be happy with whatever move they do, whether it's moving guys like Grizzlick, moving guys like Hall, you know, a very good player like a DeBrusk or what have you, if that's what it needs to be. But it all comes down to, I think, what the Bruins prioritize in terms of what keeps them in contention the longest. And if it's keeping Ullmark and Swayman in place, maybe that's what they have to do. But it's not an easy call, right? As much as in principle, moving him makes sense in terms of, you know, taking out two birds with one stone in terms of shedding cap and getting good assets back. If you're in a spot where you're in January and Swayman's getting taxed early and Bussey or whoever you sign as a veteran backup isn't cutting it, then there'll be a whole lot of second guesses, right? It's risky. Yeah,
it
as
is.
Much as in principle it makes sense, right?
No, you're on paper it makes sense, but you think like I have this up right here. Swayman played 37 games this year, right? There's 82 games in a regular season. Is Jeremy Swayman ready to assume 51? 53, 55 games this year? I don't know. Like, I think he can handle it, but there's going to be slumps in there. Can Busey step in and stop the bleeding for a few games? Can they get a veteran backup? Again, I don't have a name in front of me, but can they get a Yaroslav Halak-like in 2018-19? Can they get someone like him in here for $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million to step in for some of those games? Maybe, but again, that's a big ask of Swayman, I think. But again, if you're paying him, if they say, hey, no, we're going to give you a long-term deal with good money, then that's what's expected. Like, then he has to live up to that contract. Whereas, again, if you bring back Omar, as you said, you're not giving Swayman that long-term deal because he's most likely going to be the 1B as he was this year. So, again, I think we're going to get into that a lot more this offseason with kind of how this flies. One thing I do think that is pretty much close to set in stone is the bottom six next year is going to be big for younger players. That feels like, yep, an area where they're going to play the kids. You know, even paying Charlie Coyle $5.25 million as the third line center, I think is a little, that's a lot for a third line center on this team that's cap constrained, but He brings his benefits. I'm not, you know, we've discussed Coyle before. Because like McLaughlin, Beecher, Steen, Merkulov potentially could get in and see some serious time. And, you know, I know we mentioned Lowry, but again, he's just made the jump. Like, I do think he needs a full season or close to it in Providence. Lysell's another one that I think probably needs some more tuning in Providence. But a guy like McLaughlin should be able to step in and be a fourth line guy next year. Beecher could also potentially be that guy. I know his offensive numbers still are not where people thought they might be when he got drafted, but I still think like he, you know, for what he brings, potentially a fourth line presence, and Steen as well.
Yeah, no, they have options. I mean, you look at just those fourth line grinders, they should have no shortage of options. And again, a lot can change in terms of perception of how guys are. If you ask me going into camp, if Lauko was going to make an impact on this team, I'd probably have been like, he's probably on the outside looking in, right? You have other guys up in the system. Really struggled to get his traction in Providence. And even in Providence, he still wasn't as maybe impactful, but gets a chance to the NHL, and he kind of brought it whenever you needed him out there, right? So he's a guy that makes plenty of sense in terms of more minutes. You know, I'm sure they'll give a guy like Beecher more looks. As you said, probably didn't live up to expectations in his first year, at least offensively, down in Providence. But, you know, you bring him up in the NHL, get him a few reps, and see what you get out of him there. McLaughlin was a guy that, you know, people I think were up in arms about that he wasn't on the NHL roster because he was arguably probably their best player during preseason games, right? So they'll have options there. Are they going to be as good as Nosek in terms of what his tough kind of role is? That remains to be seen, but you at least have options down there. And as you said, if you're looking for a third line guy on the wing, we'll see if Lysell makes a push out of camp, even though he's played a lot of hockey over the last couple of years, and he could probably use a bit more seasoning. But I think Merkulov's a really interesting guy, right? Was one of the better players in the AHL this past year, offensively gifted. The big knock against him last year was defensively, you know, how he is, but it seems like he made a few strides in that regard. I don't think he's going to be winning the Selke or anything like that, but has a lot of talent for his role. So I think he's a really interesting guy that, if you move a guy like Hall and you're looking for another guy to put with Coyle as a way to ease them in, you know, a guy that probably has top six potential, but you want to start them off slow, giving them a guy who's very, you know, steady with the puck and opens up space like Coyle, you know, putting a guy like Merkulov or Lysell could be an option there for them. And I think if you're Bruins fan, you'd rather have a guy like Hall or Bertuzzi. You know, it's kind of like that meme of DiCaprio in that movie where he's like, we really had it all, didn't we? Like, you're not going to have a situation where you have Taylor Hall or Tyler Bertuzzi on the third line, but there is some intrigue and, you know, hope that, you know, a guy like Merkulov or Lysell could step into that role. And it's always exciting, I think, when you have younger players up in the system. It's great for the team, right? Where you save a lot of money and potentially add these young talented players to the mix. But it's kind of like, you know, the 2017-18 Bruins, where you had so many young guys crack the lineup and make an impact right away as part of that next core. So if you go into this upcoming season and a guy like Merkulov or Lysell or Lauko, McLaughlin, Lowry later on in the year, like, you at least have an opportunity here for more younger players to make their mark. And as a Bruins fan, that should be exciting to at least see what these guys have.
The offensive upside of Merkulov is really interesting to me. Yeah, and I'm curious. Player. I'm curious to see how that manifests itself, because this is obviously a team that prides itself on two-way abilities and being strong in your defensive zone. I remember last year development camp, they spoke about Merkulov's defense like it was like a crime against humanity. Yes. I do think that his offensive upside, I think, is the most of any prospect except for Lysell. I mean, I don't even think that's like particularly close. So we'll see. But I mean, it will be a year that you will see those guys in the bottom six. And you know what? Good. Play the kids. See what you got down there. You save some money in the bottom six. Like, I do think that's a good thing. So we'll see what ends up happening over the summer, dev camp, beginning of training camp. That's a long way away. We got a lot of off season left. So much off. I was thinking as we were talking about this, I was like, you told me on like May 8th we'd be sitting here talking about this stuff, I would have fucking been stunned. But here we are, we're talking about this, and that's
here we are,
the way it goes. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over at boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, we're gonna have you covered throughout this very busy off season, from free agency, trades, the draft, everything. We're gonna have covered dev camp, all of it. You can find over at boston.com. Again, we have a great staff that covers everything that's happening in Boston sports, not just the Bruins. So Celtics, Red Sox heating up. Patriots are going to start their mini camp pretty soon as well. Everything we'll have over at Boston.com. So please read over there. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. And make sure to subscribe to New England Hockey Journal. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. You Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week.